Good morning. This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. Each Thursday morning, we have an opportunity to talk with a guest about the important work that they're doing in the community and the role of faith in their life. And we broadcast live from Crosstown Concourse on 91.7 FM WYXR, a community-based radio station. So each Thursday, we start with the saint of the day. And this week, we are celebrating the feast of Saint Ambrose of Milan, actually Bishop Ambrose, a fourth century saint with a very interesting personal journey. Ambrose was the son of a Roman governor and actually ended up himself serving as a governor. Although he was raised in a Christian family, he wasn't baptized, and he got involved in the church because there were, believe it or not, fights about who should be the next bishop. And he decided that because this election was quite contentious, he was going to serve as a mediator. And apparently, as legend has it, he was able, just through the power of his presence and his words, to calm a very upset crowd, to get them to keep the peace, and to obey the law. And so instead of fighting over the two candidates for bishop, all of a sudden, both sides decided Ambrose should be our bishop. Now, I mean, he wasn't even baptized, let alone wanted to be ordained in any capacity. And yet, overwhelming his protests, he finally agreed because of the people's persistence. So he was quickly baptized and ordained as a bishop on December the 7th in the year 373. So almost 1700 years ago. Ambrose, being a skilled orator, really became known as a defender of orthodoxy, a defender of the central tenets of Christianity against certain ideas that were seen as heresy. And he also was known as a composer of hymns. He really was a practical bishop in many ways because he wrote and preached the basic tenets of the faith to educate Christians about what is the meaning of baptism? What is the meaning of the Holy Eucharist or Holy Communion? What do we really understand about the Trinity, about God as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit? He was not afraid to confront people in power and preached really passionate sermons in defense of the poor and the needy. So he has a very interesting journey of someone who was almost compelled into a role that he never, ever envisioned for himself. But when he had the sense that it was the will of the people, he entered into that role to the best of his ability, applying all of his considerable skills that he had gained in one part of his life into his role as bishop, and ended up making a huge impact on the church. And so I will conclude with the prayer that we use on the feast day of Saint Ambrose of Milan. O God, you gave your servant Ambrose grace eloquently to proclaim your righteousness in the great congregation and fearlessly to bear reproach for the honor of your name. mercifully grant to all bishops and pastors such excellence in preaching and faithfulness in administering your word, that your people may be partakers with them of the glory that shall be revealed, through Jesus Christ our Lord, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. We are really pleased to have, as a repeat performance, the executive director of Kindred Place. Jennifer, it is great to have you with us. I think you were with us about a year and a half ago, and that was actually before we were pulling down the recordings for our podcast. So this time we'll be able to share this conversation a lot more broadly. So how are things going?
Things are great. Thank you. It's so great to see you and be with you again. It feels like maybe that was 100 years ago.
It does. Yeah. It does. So, before the show began, Jennifer and I were talking about an experience of a woman from our shared alma mater. Jennifer got her bachelor's degree from Princeton, and that's where I got my master's in public administration. And I think it really speaks to perhaps some changes in how we as a country are addressing the needs of mental health. And of course, Kindred Place, where Jennifer is the executive director, provides all kinds of counseling and education services for children, parents, families, and individuals. And Jennifer, I wonder if you would mind sort of sharing that conversation about the woman who sort of had a mental health issue.
I'm happy to. And she shared this story publicly, so I don't feel like I'm telling anybody else's story. She was a high-achieving student through her, you know, as she grew up, and also a high-achieving tennis player. And so she was admitted to Princeton when she was 16 at a young age, and she went for the first year and then played on the women's tour, played pro tennis for 5 years and went back. And she and her sister had that same experience, and they were struggling with what sounds, this may sound odd to some listeners, but struggling with the weight of the expectations that come with that life. So the pressure to perform academically and on the tennis court, and it was a lot for her young self. And she and her sister went to the then president of the university and said, we're struggling with mental health, and so are so many of our friends here on campus. And the then president's response was, not at Princeton, you're not. And they were dismissed outright. And that's an experience that she carried with her. She is now a therapist in Manhattan, and she has taught, and the university has changed very much since then, I think, as the country and the world have changed with attitudes towards mental health. But mental well-being was something that you weren't supposed to talk about or struggle with if you were healthy in body and accomplished in your academics and accomplished in, you know, whatever other field you were in. You weren't supposed to struggle with mental health.
Right.
And I'm grateful that that has changed.
I am too. I am too. So Kindred Place is celebrating 40 years of service this year.
We are.
And so is the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. The same to you. We recently, last month, had our diocesan convention where we celebrated 40 years. Now, of course, our listeners from the diocese will know that the Episcopal Church has been in the state of Tennessee since the early 1800s. However, West Tennessee was sort of carved out as a separate independent diocese in 1982. So I wonder, as you think about the mission of Kindred Place, how have the needs of families and children and individuals in terms of mental health issues and parenting issues, how have those needs changed over the decades, and how has that impacted the work of Kindred Place?
What an interesting question. No one has ever asked that question that way, as we've been talking about what it's like in 40 years. So the story that we've been telling, just for context, is about how in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a change in attitude toward children. Mm-hmm. So court-appointed special advocates, or CASA grew mm-hmm. up around that time. Child advocacy centers were being formed around that time. And we were formed as part of a nationwide effort in the United States, led by exchange clubs, which are civic organizations, mm-hmm. to form family centers to help parents. And so there was this idea that children needed and deserved the attention of the community around them 40 years ago. And I think in 40 years, that really hasn't changed much in the recognition that parenting is work mm-hmm. and taking care of children is a job that we don't often enough acknowledge. And mm-hmm. I think that, so we'll get to talk about the pandemic, but so what has changed in 40 years might be the willingness to talk about that work. Mm-hmm. And I think the pandemic, what we've lived through in the last 3 years, has in many ways helped that conversation, even though it has felt hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sense is that parents with school-age children certainly had a newfound appreciation for teachers having to virtual school children during the pandemic and having them home all day with them. Just all kinds of pressures that we've been dealing with. And sometimes maybe analogous to the example that you gave about the young woman at Princeton from years ago, sometimes we're still afraid to say it's hard or I'm dealing with a lot, even though we've made progress. So what are some of the issues that cause families to say, wow, I can't make it on my own. Let me either pick up the phone or figure out a way to get in touch with folks at Kindred Place for services.
And I would be remiss if I didn't say, I hope every family would have that. They don't have to call us. Mm-hmm. They don't have to call Kindred Place.
But right.
Acknowledging that this work is hard. I think I'm going to come back to your question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is more apparent now is that the pandemic exposed things that were already true.
Right.
And so for parents who were juggling career, professional work, and work at home mm-hmm. with nurturing their children and also trying to be human and take care of themselves, all of that together came to a forefront, and the competition among those different poles, you could right. see it on Zoom screens.
Right.
And so to acknowledge that that is a challenge of its own, even mm-hmm. if you are well-resourced and in good body health, and mm-hmm. that it's challenging to manage all those things. And if you add illness or economic challenge or other pressures there, it makes it only harder.
Mm-hmm.
So that was true before. We see that it's true now. I think what often prompts people to call, or what has prompted people mm-hmm. to call, is when something starts to feel utterly unmanageable, like they just reach a breaking point mm-hmm. and can't cope, or there's something when someone expresses a need and says, I cannot handle what's happening to me. When somebody's brave enough to say that, mm-hmm. then often a parent or child will make the call. And, you know, sometimes it's a youth, a middle or high school aged child, a youth, young adult who will surface that, and it's hard sometimes for parents to hear when their yeah. kids say, I'd really like to talk to somebody about what's happening, and I need to talk to somebody other than you.
Yeah. And yet I think there's such power in acknowledging
Great power.
We can't get through this journey called life on our own. Brené Brown, yeah. who is an Episcopalian and someone who's
an all-around awesome
human being, whose great work on shame and vulnerability has been so powerful in my own life, to really see that vulnerability as a sign of strength and not as a weakness, again, is sort of a change that hopefully will become more and more an accepted part of just what it means to be a human being.
And to connect with other people. I mean,
yes.
one of her go-to phrases is that we're wired for connection.
Yes.
And her most recent book, Atlas of the Heart, that came out came out during the last 3 year period. I can't
right.
remember. It's all sort of a blur, but I love the way she has talked about that what led her to do that work and write that book was that we had basically three emotions that we knew how to describe. We were happy, sad, and mad. She mm-hmm. uses different words for
right,
mad. But,
right.
And so she spent time mapping all of this range of feelings, and she and Susan David and others who are really going beneath that superficial level mm-hmm. of mad, sad, and angry and helping people learn to identify how they're feeling. And mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that we say at Kindred Place, you know, you're entitled to feel the way you feel. The way mm-hmm. you feel is what you are feeling. And that's not right, wrong. It doesn't belong to anybody but you. And so mm-hmm. to learn how to acknowledge that and to describe that in words that you can communicate and connect with another person is a really powerful experience. So to say, I am feeling, I'll just use this book because it's a great example. My favorite is when she describes the difference between jealousy and envy. Mm. And so if you are envious of something, you wish you had that thing. If you are jealous, you wish that you were the recipient of something. So the feeling of jealousy is, and I'm doing probably a poor job of describing her work, but but those two words are very different, and those two feelings are very different. And I think that nuance is great. So that's all great stuff up in the head. For practical, everyday parents and people who might be listening, I think one of the greatest, most empowering things is to be able to say to someone, I just don't feel like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to feel like myself again.
Yeah.
And even if you don't know anything more than that and mm-hmm. can't dig any deeper, I think that's a great start.
Yeah. And probably if you're like me, you may not know what you need to do right. to start feeling like yourself again.
And you don't have to.
Yeah,
I mean, I think right. the, you know, the thing, you and I were talking a little bit before the show, we've lived through so much, especially it's been accelerated in the last 3 years, mm-hmm. and that feeling of wanting to just be finished with this, just wanting to, you know, an answer, flip a switch, take
yep.
a pill, just make this all go away. Is a human response to the weight of all the things that we've been living through. And the truth is, it's just not that easy. We're working through something that's both complex and complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So finding a starting place is great. So if mm-hmm. your starting place is, I just don't feel like myself and I want to again, that's an opening the door.
Yeah. So are there any new programs or initiatives that Kindred Place is now offering that maybe have developed over the course of the pandemic based upon the new needs that presented themselves?
There are a couple of them, and they all may sound counterintuitive. So
mm-hmm.
one of the things that we are recognizing and coming to terms with ourselves, that maybe others are as well, is that everyone can use a little bit of help in their relationships with their parents, with their partners, with their friends, with their work colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Your relationships are complicated because you are trying to be in relationship with another person. And so during the pandemic, we added some programming that is in support of healthy relationships, that there doesn't have to be anything that's not anything dramatically wrong.
Got
in
it.
Your daily
so you don't
life.
Have to have be in the midst of a crisis in order to
Correct.
Say,
thank you.
I want to focus on this a
right.
little more.
So okay. to say, I really wish that I had a way to balance my life better, to balance my emotions, my intellect, you know, the way I handle my day and build some better habits. I wish I had a stronger relationship with my partner. Our kids have gone to college. We had a baby. We didn't have a baby. Something
right.
that happened in a couple's relationship that's just a life experience that changes the dynamic. And then to come and be able to work through just what it is to be in a healthy relationship,
mm-hmm.
how to strengthen that. So we added the Gottman curriculum, a 7 principles curriculum from John and Julie Gottman, the book is called Making Marriage Work, which if they were able, they would rename Making Relationships
yeah.
Work. But again, so that piece, we have added coaching services, which is really different from counseling and
yes.
therapy. A coaching interaction is different to just help parents, excuse me, or anybody who is trying to find a way forward and would like a little help.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed on your website that you have mindful movement.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to remember that we are embodied people. We're about to celebrate the incarnation. So our bodies have to be important to God. And I think that one of the things that's happened to me in 2022, once we moved from everything being on Zoom, when I was walking a lot more and doing a lot more, to everything in person, is that I haven't been as mindful about moving my body as I should be. So what is that program of mindful movement involved?
Mindful movement is primarily right now yoga classes for kids or for adult caregivers and their children together. So we have two different versions. One's for young children and the other is for moms, dads are welcome to, and infants to come and just practice being together in their embodied experience. And it's part of the work that we added on when we were awarded the Universal Parenting Place work. When the Universal Parenting Place is closed and we were the recipient of that idea and support for that work, we added things that are just relationship strengthening and mindful movement together. Or mindful movement for children, how to move your body through space, how to be in the world as a physical experience and be with other people is a help. So on Saturday mornings, we have mindful movement. It's on our calendar, on our website, and it's free. We encourage, you know, people, if they're able to donate and make a contribution for coming, great. If they are not in that position, come anyway. We would love to have you.
So as you think about the current offerings that Kindred Place has, are there any other areas, you know, in a perfect world where you would love to have more resources to devote to those things?
Well, sure. I mean, so more resources, what we would do with the magic more resources. How about that? We would do with magic more resources would be to be more available, I'm saying this very poorly, across the range of economic reality in Memphis. So one of the things that's important to us is being able to provide income-based financial assistance. That's what we do with the philanthropic support we get. We try to help people come. You don't want to go see a mental health professional who isn't trained in providing services that you need, and that education and that experience come at a cost of, paying people to do that work. And so it can't be free because it isn't free.
Right.
And so if we had the magic unlimited financial resources, we would make accessibility to that always match the need in Memphis.
And my sense is that Memphis is almost like a tale of two cities, right? There is great wealth in some quarters and people who have been very generous from a philanthropic standpoint, and yet there is still great poverty and people sort of locked into cycles. And it's been that way for a while. And I'm, you know, a relatively new Memphian, only having lived here since 2019. So I know there are people who've thought about these issues for far longer than I have, but it's an interesting dichotomy to be in a community that has both of those extremes.
It is. And a nuance in there across those that we're seeing, not just in Memphis, but more broadly, the idea of trust-based philanthropy, that that people know what to do, or that there is a greater belief in the autonomy across the board. So what that means is when you trust people to do what it is that is right in their mission in serving the people who are coming, and relax some of the tighter restrictions and requirements related to that support, it also empowers the people who are coming for services and doing the work to be able to respond in a human way. And so I think we're sort of learning through trust, I think, across the economic spectrum in that, and what it means to believe that somebody can say, this is what I need for me, and to trust that they are the author of their life and know what they need, and for someone to say, this is what I'll do with your gift because it's right, and for somebody to say, I trust you to do with my gift what's right.
Yeah. It's interesting. In the church world, people of goodwill have often, I think, within their own sort of governing board meetings and considering their own gifts and skills, have decided, we want to offer this program to the mm-hmm. community. And it's well-meaning, but it doesn't always match with the needs. And I think in the church world, hopefully, we're actually trying to listen more mm-hmm. and solicit input from the recipients of the program, so that instead of just, you know, giving something that isn't even helpful, we can tailor it to them. And I think it goes to that whole thing about trust. Like, even if you're economically disadvantaged, you still have a sense of what you need, and you should have some autonomy about the things that you're engaged with.
And that autonomy is what allows you to be in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, as many other organizations have, we've done work on values inside Kindred Place, you know, our own personal values, our organizational values, and really putting language to what's important to us. And so this one is a personal one for me. Autonomy is my top value. It's something that I believe in for my children, yeah. for my colleagues, for people in general. I believe that it is not mine to say what you mm-hmm. need or want.
Yeah.
And so helping people develop language to say what they need, yeah. and whether that is my children, my colleagues, or folks mm-hmm. who are coming to Kindred Place, or you here in the studio, mm-hmm. to the extent that we can help one another in expressing those needs, expressing those feelings, we're doing a great service. For me to tell you what I think you feel or what I think you need, mm-hmm. or for me to make that decision that belongs to you, is taking away a power that's yours.
Yeah.
So
that brings us back full circle to the beginning of this show and St. Ambrose of Milan, someone who was a secular governor and not even baptized, but because the people saw gifts and skills that he had that might be beneficial to the church, almost pressured him, really, to step into a role that he didn't see himself in. And I think all of us, in the various sort of hats that we wear, have seasons when we're called to shepherd something that may not have been of our own choosing. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your thoughts about strategies to help us navigate that in the times when we can't be completely autonomous because of other sort of larger pressures that come to bear?
I think about this, and I've been thinking since we talked before the show. I mean, rising to an occasion before you, for any of us, mm-hmm. when an occasion is presented that you are asked to do something that might feel beyond your immediate desires, mm-hmm. is a great honor for someone to say, yeah. you know, I think you're the person mm-hmm. to do this. And even if you're not sure, I think that is a great honor for someone to have. It isn't always a comfortable honor.
Right.
And so thinking and feeling your way through what it is that might be opening as a path to you. I mean, this mm-hmm. is where I think that it's going to sound like I'm not answering your question. I'm going to tell you a short story. I was working with a group this summer, and we were working on mental, which means mm-hmm. to me, intellectual, emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being. So we got through the first three, you know, buckets of work pretty quickly. Mental work, you know, what you do to support yourself. Emotional work was a little tougher. Physical work, you know, people came to readily. We got to the spiritual piece, and there were crickets. I mean, yeah. no one really wanted to talk about spiritual work. And they said, well, this is deeply personal. I don't really talk about my faith. And I said, well, do you talk about your values? Do you talk about what's important to you and what is affirming to mm-hmm. you in that way? Well, I never really thought about spirit as that way. So we had a great conversation about what it is to be to have a spiritual mm-hmm. experience and live into your values. And I think when an opportunity is presented that any of us may not want to rise to, mm-hmm. that it's a great time to check in and say what's important inside me that might be what someone recognizes in mm-hmm. me. So it's not my deciding what you need. It is my seeing in you something that you may not yet fully see in yourself.
Yes.
And I think that is an opening to a connection and a shared experience that can be transformative. That was a long answer.
No, it's a great answer. In my denomination, the word that we would use for that is discernment.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And that we discern in community for precisely that reason, because we all have blinders about our gifts and skills. And it can be really hard sometimes to give ourselves credit or to fully see ourselves. And so the gifts that we may have that the community discerns, maybe we need that mirror sort of held up occasionally. It's not only the negative feedback that we get from the community. It's also, did you realize that you're really awesome at, you know, X, and sort of fill in the blanks?
I think that is, you know, for whatever reason, and some have said this comes from a religious tradition, not probably an Episcopal religious mm-hmm. tradition, but they're wired to think about our faults, our shortcomings,
oh,
our negatives, what
yes.
it is we need to shore up. And it's much harder to talk about our gifts and our talents. And so when someone recognizes a gift or a talent, it is a skill you can develop is to say, I don't know why you keep asking me to do this, and a skill to learn to say, I see something in you, and I see you struggling to accept it in yourself. And here's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
I wonder what it feels like to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know that St. Ambrose said any of that back in, you know, the
fourth century.
Yeah, right. That was, I don't know, that was fourth century language. But there's a great book. It's a workbook. It's the World of Work book called Radical Candor, written by a Memphis native. Her name is Kim Scott.
Mm-hmm.
She also went to Princeton. She and then went, and she's been in Silicon Valley for a long time. She wrote this book, Radical Candor, and her construct is a 2x2 grid that is about challenging directly and caring deeply. And when you care deeply about someone and you are brave enough to challenge directly whatever is happening, you live in that top square in the 2x2
mm-hmm.
grid that she originally called Radical Candor. She's recently reissued the book and calls it Compassionate Candor.
Hmm.
So being able to say honestly what you're observing, and to express that in the context of caring deeply about another human being, is to say, I see in you this potential that I'd like to help you develop if you would let me.
Mm.
And that is a kind of honesty that can deepen a relationship.
Yeah, and maybe as people are going to be gathering probably in larger numbers for Christmas for the first time in a couple of years, we may have lots of opportunities to use some of these really important skills that you have shared with us. So, Jennifer, as we conclude this part of the show, I wonder what's giving you a sense of hope at this point in your work and in what you're seeing in the community?
It gives me a sense of hope this morning has been watching all the kids in
lobby
as we've
yes.
been recording. You know, I listen to youth and young adults talk about the world and their experiences in a way that is unlike anything I experienced at that time in my life. And it gives me great hope that we are evolving as humans in our willingness to live in our imperfections with one another and experience that and not, you know, be so rigid about it. I think mm-hmm. that gives me hope. And so I'm fortunate to have two college-age children who bring people of that age into my house, and I get to hear them talk, and that is, it fills me with hope.
Wonderful. So if people are interested in learning more about the work of Kindred Place, either to perhaps avail themselves of some of the programming or maybe even to figure out ways to volunteer, what would be the best way for them to learn?
The best way to learn is to go to our website. It's kindred-place.org. There's a hyphen between the two words, kindred and place. kindred-place.org. We're also on social media, Instagram, Facebook. You can find us that way. But go to the website. There's a form you can fill out to get more information or to get started. We have a blog, a newsletter, social feeds that just provide tips for people have a conversation during the holidays that
mm-hmm.
might be hard. You know, you mentioned it.
Yes.
It's a big one.
Yes. Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for coming back to be a guest on Faithfully Memphis.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So we are back, and I wanted to let the listeners in Shelby County know about a special event that is going to be taking place this Saturday, December the 10th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and that will be our second annual Advent Arts Market. We started this program last year, and it was a wonderful opportunity for local artists and craftspersons in the Memphis area to sell their wares. We also will have food trucks. There will be live music. And if you're like me and really behind in doing your shopping for the holiday season, whether that's Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, and you need to pick up a few gifts, consider joining us. The Advent Arts Market will take place at Barth House, which is our Episcopal College ministry located on the campus of the University of Memphis at 409 Patterson Ave. And it will be open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday. So if you're out and running errands anytime between 9 and 4 and you want to stop by, we encourage you to do so. So just a reminder that Faithfully Memphis is not only broadcast on WYXR 91.7 FM, but you can also hear our program wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Music and Spotify. So we encourage you to not only listen to us, but also to subscribe, to follow, and to give us any comments or feedback that you may have about possible program topics or things that you would like to learn more about. We appreciate Jennifer being with us today, and the reminder that there'll be lots of opportunities over the next few weeks with the holiday season to engage in honest conversation, to give loving feedback, and to really let people know where we are. And if things are hard, it's okay to say that. It's okay to acknowledge that. We don't have to have all the answers. And certainly, as a Christian, one of the things that I love so much about Jesus is that he very often answered a question with another question. He was not someone, even though we want to make him out as a person who always had a definitive answer. So often his answer was a question, and he put it back on the individual asking the question to do some of their own interior reflection and consideration. He didn't give people an easy out or an easy pat answer to a complicated situation. And so if he's our example, then we don't have to have easy, pat, pre-programmed answers to the really complicated situations that we may find ourselves in. So maybe we can all be patient with one another and gentle with ourselves. So until next Thursday, friends, stay safe and stay positive.